Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, doing eight big surprises from the 2020 season, things I didn't expect, and doing a little process accountability here to start the off season. Just things I didn't see coming, things that and how we really adjust from that, right? Is this things that were just, you know, in the range of outcomes but were low probability bets? Or is this things that we missed, things that we should have rethought, things that, you know, we is it a process miss or just a low range of outcomes type thing? So that's really some of the things here we're going to look for, talk about some of the storylines, talk about some of the things we learned and about how going forward. So the first thing is the Myles Gaskin, James Robinson sort of running backs out of nowhere narrative. Myles Gaskin comes in, you know, beginning of the season. I did a podcast at some point, and I ran some basically touchdown independent numbers, and he was like just outrageous in terms of how high he was, top 10. Totally off the radar. They brought in Matt Breida. They brought in Jordan Howard. Breida via trade, Jordan Howard via signing. No real indication that it was going to be anything Myles Gaskin. If Myles Gaskin was going to survive last year's depth chart, you figure they wouldn't have made two transactions in front of that, in front of him. He ends up coming out, winning the job, which was totally unexpected. And I sort of take two tracks on it. One, I think maybe the thing that we should have saw, and I did have a question of this, and I didn't see Myles Gaskin as being the answer. So I'll absolutely cop to that. But I said, if Matt Breida is not the receiving back and they're going to play a negative game script, who is that person going to be? Because that's interesting. Now, that thought was right for the wrong reason. The thought was, well, they actually have someone that they think is better than Matt Breida across the board. And it wasn't really a negative game script situation. It was they're good, right? So this is a debate about, yes, we should have been open to a range of outcomes on there's another person in this role. Even still, if you told me that they were going to be a playoff team, a playoff contending team, that Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to play well, that they were going to be relevant in week 17, that the third pick in the draft that they presently have the rights to wasn't going to be their own, it was going to be Houston's, right? None of those things would have put me on Gaskin, at least from a process perspective. I think if it had been a full-on training camp, maybe we get more reports, maybe we get more reporters at training camp seeing rotations, those sorts of things, right? That's something maybe we'll get more of in 2021. Didn't get quite as much of that in 2020. Also, we didn't get games. Right, so that was the big thing a couple years ago with the Darrell Henderson thing was he was playing when everyone else wasn't. That was a big indicator. Maybe we would have saw that at a Gaskin. Same thing with James Robinson. James Robinson's different for a lot of reasons. Like the profile coming out was just so cheap and honestly was like fringe fourth round rookie picks just because he was undrafted and absolutely buried behind Fournette, behind Raquel Armstead, behind what looked like Divine Ozigbo. Dario Ogunbowale ends up there as well. And it's James Robinson. It's the Leonard Fournette's cut. We'll get to him in a minute. It is Raquel Armstead on COVID. Divine Ozigbo hurt. And it's James Robinson, basically next man up, and plays very well. And gets all the way up to the top 10 in seasonal scoring. We'll see where he actually finishes out in total, but he's absolutely going to be a running back one. He's got the injury here. He's going to miss a couple of games. But right now, as I sit here right now, through 14 games, he is running back four on the season. So on a per-game basis, I think that's just a little bit behind Aaron Jones, for example, who's behind him by a handful of points, but has played one less game. So that's looks like about running back five on the season in terms of points per game and the guys that have played a sample size, and McCaffrey would be over him, but hasn't played the sample size. So, you know, that's just it's a huge number from coming at so cheap. And just the gap between him and Kamara, just think of this. James Robinson's running back four, and Kamara is running back one. Kamara is nearly 130 points difference. So when you think about that, it's just a huge, huge difference there. Talk about some more of the season-long standings. Once the season actually closes up, all the data finishes, then we can sort of really run some numbers, and they're set in stone. So we'll look at that coming forward. Second one's Leonard Fournette. And this one I'm not sure of what the right answer was. I thought I saw a change in Leonard Fournette as a person, and I thought I saw a change in him as a teammate and all that stuff. Again, we talk about players and games and practice reports and all that stuff. That's a spit in the ocean in terms of the player's life, right? We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know all that. A lot of that's with Haskins too, right? And I think that's a real lesson that we've learned about this is we should be really open to a wide range of outcomes because there's so much we don't know about players. We think we know a ton because we watch tape. We don't know what their workout habits are or their off-field stuff or anything like that. There was a book a long time ago about Fantasyland. I think it was called Fantasyland. It's about basically some amateurs getting into fantasy baseball and playing some like high level competition. And it's probably like, you know, early 2000s, the book came out. And I believe one of the guys is actually now writes at The Athletic. But, you know, one of the things that they talked about was they had basically a nerd side, which was they were running all the data, doing all the analytics. They didn't really know much what they were doing, but they were running the number side of it. And then they had another guy who was basically the player intel guy, and it was really interesting. He was finding out who got married, you know, who was who had kids, you know, newborns and all this stuff. Like, he was going through all this stuff. It's kind of the thing with Leonard Fournette, right? If we had some of that intel, maybe we would have looked at things differently. I think a big thing with him is, and we see this sometimes, is we get big popular personalities talking about players. And the question I have a lot of the times is it narrative or is it knowledge, right? Narrative or knowledge. People were dumping all over him and were saying, hey, he's not good. Hey, he's going to get cut. Hey, he's not going to be here. All these things. Was that right for the right reasons? Was it right for the wrong reasons? Right? Well, I'm not sure there. We see a lot of these things where people will make these calls and they will be right for the wrong reasons, or they'll be wrong for the right reasons. And you know, there was other notable big takes, like, for example, DeAndre Hopkins was going to be terrible and anyone taking him was going to be a dope, basically. And that didn't really work out. So that's something that I think is really tough to navigate, right? And that's something I think is really tough to sort of decipher out from, you know, these anecdotal things, what the real trend is. So that is something I think we need to pay attention to. Again, I don't know if he was truly a predictable one in some of the ways that people thought, especially coming off last year and how much usage they had. And he had looked to turn things around. So I think part of it could be Doug Marrone as well. So we'll see where he lands. But that's a one I think we need to try and figure out narrative from knowledge, right? Narrative from knowledge. David Montgomery is number three. And injury benefits him pretty significantly here. With Tariq Cohen, he goes from being, you know, basically a 55-60% snap share guy up to 85%, seeing a huge workload, uptick in targets, all that stuff. I thought the most interesting one with him was rushing yards over expectation. He was at 0.62. That is running back 11. He's about average in terms of attempts over expectation too. So that does signal a little bit of the big play aspect to him. And we saw some stuff out of him that we haven't typically seen. And I think, again, I think it, more and more as we look at players, I think we need to be a little bit more agnostic about name and a little bit more on profiles. And you had coming in here a running back who was locked into a deal, a three-year deal. Again, Cohen's there, so that takes a little bit of the ceiling off, and Cohen's hurt. Now the ceiling is more accessible. And I think we saw some of that. But I do think this pedigree with a job and locked in, I think it really needs to be a focus of what we do in the off season. So he's one of the guys that has really reshaped about how I thought. And each year there's a handful of guys that just make it a little bit different in terms of how I think about players. He's one of them this year, for sure. So when you go back and look, you know, for example, like I said, he was 11th in terms of rushing yards over expectation. And when you go back and look, last year he was below average, right? Below expectation. Similar in terms of attempts over expectation. So this year it was 39.4. Last year it was 39.9. Last year he was under expectation in terms of total yardage. And again, that speaks to he got a couple of more big plays this year and really turned it around in terms of some of the stat stuff. So I'll be interested to see what his valuation is. People are calling him a sell right now. And again, he's locked in a couple years and we know sort of who he is. And that is a three down, the potential to be a three down back. We'll see with Tariq Cohen. I think the Tariq Cohen thing could be a little bit of a trap, honestly, because he wasn't that involved pre-injury. So, you know, we'll see there. I'm not sure Tariq Cohen's really going to hold a ton back from David Montgomery, so we'll see there. Fourth big story is Pittsburgh wide receivers. I just found this fascinating. Deontay Johnson, 23% target share, 24% air yards. Chase Claypool, 16% target share, 29% air yards. So almost 2-1 in terms of air yards of target share. That just means huge downfield. Juju Smith-Schuster, 19% target share. So second on the team behind Deontay Johnson, 15% air yards. When you go back and look, his ADOT the past 3 years, 8.8 in 2019, 9.7 in 8.8 in 2018, 9.7 in 2019, 5.5 in 2020. So just a huge, huge fall off a cliff. You look at yards after the catch, which if you're targeted further down the field, you would think, hey, it's kind of like the Mike Evans problem. He doesn't do a lot after the catch because he's making catch point plays down the field in close coverage. It's not really a run after the catch type of thing. And when you throw it shorter, you're, you know, aiming for more run yards after the catch. So with the 2018 numbers, 5.8 yards after the catch. 2019, 5.5. So a little bit of a decrease there when you saw the uptick in the ADOT. This year, huge downtick in ADOT to 5.5, 4.2 yards after the catch. So is that him? Is that Roethlisberger? I don't know. I think his free agency situation could be a big one. That's definitely going to be a situation I think we need to watch for. I'm not sure what the market's going to do. He's going to be one of the maybe like 10 guys I'm really interested in how the market treats him. Again, I like the profile, but the downtick in some of the stats are pretty concerning at this point. And I think maybe a change of scenery would help him. Again, he was young from a really good age, so I think he's good. The question I have is he more Jordan Matthews than he is Allen Robinson? Right, Jordan Matthews is a big uptick, kind of a system guy early on in his career, and played pretty well from an early perspective, and then, you know, an early career arc, and then had some injuries and fell out of the NFL pretty quickly, right, in terms of NFL relevancy. Is that where Juju's at? Right, is that what's going on here? So that would just be something that I would think in terms of alarm bells about Jordan Matthews are going off when I look at Juju Smith-Schuster. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs is number five. I'll just say I pride myself in having just outrageously wide ranges of outcomes on guys. You know, I was in on Josh Allen where he was going in rookie drafts just because I thought, hey, that's the right process. You have to be in. You know, he's a fourth round start one guy when he's a mid second super flex guy. And that was really before I started playing super flex in a ton of volume. So, but when you sort of look at that, you're like, okay, you know, he is very, very much a guy that's undervalued by how he's being treated by the market. But again, I still don't have high hopes, right? That was kind of the difference was I'm not a huge fan of the talent, but I'm a huge fan of the cost. And so even that I would be bullish compared to the market on his odds. And I didn't see any of this coming at all. There's really nothing to see in terms of him having this big of an uptick. And he basically goes from having just a negative 7.7 in terms of completion percentage over expectation. So that's measuring what your completion percentage is based on what it should be in terms of next gen stats is algorithm, right? And it measures, you know, distance and separation and all those things. ADOT, all those things. As a rookie, negative 7.7. So that was really bad. Negative 3.7 last year. So notable uptick, but still not good, right? But I think you could say, hey, listen, you could play sort of a high variance game and you can kind of eat that. This year, positive 4.3. That's top four in the league. nowhere in his range of outcomes was that for me. Subscriber Carlo actually did some work in the offseason about guys changing teams in terms of wide receivers, and it came to the conclusion that it's actually a downtick for the player. A couple of notable exceptions to that are this year are Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins. And Hopkins may be a little bit different of a story, but I think Diggs with the volume, but I just didn't see him having this big of an impact. And even when you look at Josh Allen, it's everywhere. Right, I mean, the thing with Josh Allen is it's everywhere. So you look at some of the field splits and those sorts of things. It's just out of control. I mean, going back to 2019 here, just outrageous in terms of some of the stats with the he was terrible down the field, really. In 2018, 2019, he was, in terms of AYA, which is adjusted yards per attempt, which basically measures touchdowns and interceptions. He was terrible down the field, really struggled. And then you sort of turn the page to this year, and he's good. He's basically good everywhere, right? And that's just something I just really didn't see coming into this season, just this big growth. And again, I would caution folks about saying, hey, like Drew Lock's this guy or next rookie is this guy or whatever, right? I mean, however you want to sort of couch the next guy, the next Josh Allen, I'd be super skeptical about that. I'd be very skeptical about that because this is just a really, really rare outcome. Say one other thing about Josh Allen. I don't think it's just the addition of Stephon Diggs either. John Brown has actually measured by AYA, again, adjusted yards per attempt. That's yards plus touchdowns times 20 minus interceptions times 45 divided by attempts, right? It basically is giving you credit for touchdowns, docking you for interceptions, and incorporating that into your yards number. Slightly better on one less target, John Brown over Stephon Diggs. So when we talk about how good Stephon Diggs is, also remember, right, in that same breath is how good John Brown is. So if you're looking for an arbitrage here next year, I actually think that's an interesting one. A couple other notable things about the Bills. Dawson Knox, fourth best receiver in terms of for receiving target. He's obviously tight end in terms of AYA. Only 83 targets over his two seasons, but fourth best. That's behind John Brown, behind Stephon Diggs, behind Robert Foster, actually, who fell off the radar, which was almost totally unexpected, really, for me, and ahead of Gabriel Davis there. So Cole Beasley has been good there for him. That's more of a chain moving type thing for Josh Allen. He's down a little bit further down there as well, but he's north of eight, which is also very good. So whole offense is pretty good. And again, when you just look at it's Josh Allen was just so much better across basically every spot. It's pretty notable. It's an absolute increase in every quadrant of the field. So it's not just, hey, he's doing one thing better or he's just got one different threat. This speaks to me very, very much as a changed player. So we'll see. I'm not sure how much I want to really go all in on that. I think there will be some regression, but notably, he was worse to the left of the field this year than he has been in the prior 2 years of his career. But when we look to the right, and especially deep balls, deep middle, deep right, just absolutely, absolutely game-changing in terms of what it's unlocked. So I think some of that not to the left stuff is actually John Brown. So, and I think Kelvin Benjamin was lining up to the right there. So big adjustments there in some of the weapons, but I still think there's actually, some more well-roundedness, and he's shown a better ability to his left. And I think that has to do with who was over there. So, okay. Next one is the Ryan Tannehill regression, right? I thought we were going to see a ton of regression out of Ryan Tannehill and just didn't really expect him to to be this different person, right? And that's really what he has been since Miami. The numbers since Miami to now, 7.0 yards per attempt, AYA of 6.7, touchdown rate 4.2, and interception rate 2.6. Those are his Miami numbers. Tennessee numbers, the 2 years he's been in Tennessee. Again, he's playing this week, so this isn't a full complete line, but you'll get the idea. 8.6 yards per attempt, that's up 1.6 yards. AYA of 9.2, that is up 2.5 adjusted yards per attempt. Just unreal. The touchdown rate, 7.3%. That is up from 4.2%. And then the interception rate is down 1.8%. So when you sort of add it all together, he goes from being a less than 2-to-1 touchdown interception guy to a 4-to-1 touchdown interception guy. The yards per attempt way up. It's just a really remarkable transition. He is quarterback 8. Now, again, he's going to be 33 years old. How do we treat him? Well, I'll say I think we have to treat him like the Tennessee guy, right? And I think that you can look at him in two ways. You can look at the whole career. You can look at the Tennessee guy. And I think that this is probably an indication of a changed guy. And when we sort of go back and look, did he ever get truly a fair shake? You know, they had some... if you sort of go back and you sort of recreate some of the stuff, you had Gase and you had all that problem. They ran him out of town. Gase was just atrocious for offensive efficiency. But even before that, Joe Philbin was there for a bit. And when you sort of look at some of the Joe Philbin stuff, right, he was attached to Rodgers sort of in that early Green Bay stuff with Rodgers. And, you know, now we sort of look back on that and it was stagnant. Right. And so it's an interesting and Rodgers can just elevate anything. But it's an interesting when you look back now that it's a really positive system. Their offensive coordinator is going to be, a really good head coach. He's a pretty interesting guy, Arthur Smith, in terms of some of the stuff that he actually incorporates. So I think that one's just it's really interesting about how we value him. And I think he's probably going to be one of those target guys around the. You know, if I sort of had to think about it, he probably comes in ahead of like Stafford and Cousins. And, you know, sort of in that range, there's going to be more sexy guys in front of him in terms of, Herbert's going to go in front of Burrow too, I would imagine. But you sort of look at that range, it's like it actually gets a little bit deeper because you feel better about Tannehill. So you look at Tannehill, Cousins, you know, how do we feel about Matt Ryan? Maybe he's one we can talk about at a different point. But Goff and Derek Carr, right? And sort of look at all these guys, and that makes a pretty robust set of options in there in that sort of teens range. And I think Tannehill sort of extends it out a little bit where you have maybe questions about Goff, right? Or you have questions about some of these other guys. I think Tannehill actually shores that up a little bit. So that's, a really big one. That's a notable mover for Superflex. Consideration as well. You have to keep in mind that he's going to be 33 years old. I think people think he's a little bit younger than that just because we haven't seen a ton of him be that good. So this is a pretty unique breakout. But good to see him back it up. And honestly, it's one of those things I'd rather pay up now for him than pay up last year with all the uncertainty, thinking he was going to be a big regression guy. At least we have a better idea if this is who he is. 8.6 yards per attempt isn't over 2 years isn't an accident. So is he truly that guy? Is that what we would project next year? No, but it's much more, we're projecting much closer to that than I think that 7 number from Miami. Okay, Taysom Hill is number 8 here for the Saints. And I spent all offseason, you know, listening to the Sean Payton stuff. They signed him to this bloated contract. And I was like, this can't actually be happening, right? Like the whole Steve Young thing's a little out of control, right? I just can't really get on board with those comps. If he was actually a franchise quarterback, wouldn't we know before he was, you know, well into the middle part of his career, right? Until he was 30, I think we would have a better idea of that before now. Well, he comes in and is absolutely viable here down the stretch to play. So he finishes the season. Again, this is a little bit more condensed. He finishes the season with 159 points according to Football Guys. They got him at 29 on the season. So again, some of that is some of the touchdown stuff, especially the rushing stuff, is when he was playing, right, as a H-back type. Four touchdowns, two interceptions, 6.7 yards per attempt, right? So, again, I know that there were some high-profile people poo-pooing him. That's actually not bad. When you look at Michael, I just pulled up Michael Thomas just because I think this is going to be the really interesting one. When you pull up Michael Thomas and look at, he's caught passes from four different quarterbacks in his career: Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill, Drew Brees, Jameis Winston. It's only five for Jameis Winston, so we could sort of exclude those. So the other three, the best has been Teddy Bridgewater in terms of AYA, 9.96. The second best has been Taysom Hill. Again, that's 40 attempts, 9.93. And for Drew Brees, it's been 9.37. So a notable difference there. Again, small sample size, all that. I would just say if Taysom Hill is the quarterback next year, to just say, hey, it's going to absolutely tank Michael Thomas, I think that's probably bad process. The flip side of that I would say is, what is the, you know, give me the how does it hurt him perspective? Well, I think the how it hurts him would be it takes down the volume a little bit, right? I think that's really the thing. And so when you look at this, right, some of the stuff with Brees out of the lineup has just been outrageous. So they were averaging, again, in terms of plays, they actually averaged more plays without Brees this year than with him. Again, it's minor. So it's 65.27 with him, 65.75 without him. Some of that's probably not on the quarterback, and you'll see here why in a second. Points four with Brees, 32. Points four without Brees, 24. So that's a touchdown difference, a little bit more than a touchdown difference. The points against, here's the big one, 25.27 points against with Brees in the lineup, 13 without Brees in the lineup. So that's really the difference there in terms of all the stuff. When you look at points per drive, 2.9 points per drive with Drew Brees, without him, 2.2. They're actually their Pythagorean expectations higher, and that's mostly the defense. Passing attempts, I think here's the key one, right? If you're sort of gonna key in on something and say, hey, where, you know, I don't think it's a, hey, his efficiency's like projected to go down. 34.18 attempts per game with Drew Brees. Without Drew Brees this year, 28.5. That's a difference over the course of a season of about 90. So when you sort of take that out and you say, all right, let's give him a third of the target share, right now we're really starting to make a damage, and I think that's high. That's high, you know, that's a high number. But when you sort of start looking at that and saying, all right, like it looks, you know, we're taking a decent chunk, right? Maybe we take in 20% out of his workload, right? So if we were expecting, you know, something up in the 150s in terms of targets, right? What it looks a little bit less now, would sort of be the thing there. You know, that's, I think, the concern, right? It's not on a per target basis. It's on a amount of target basis. And that's really the thing there that you have to keep in mind. So 83% of the passing attempts that they have without Brees than they do with Brees. So so that's really what you're looking for there. Again, so if you drop him, if you take that 250 and just drop him by, you know, 20%, you're getting $120, right? So I think it's probably going to be higher than that, would sort of be my thought. And there's not a ton of competition there. You could actually see guys moving out, and it becomes even much more of a Michael Thomas show. But that would be the concern. It's not the efficiency, it's the targets with him there. So, and he's got to get healthy. But again, if he's going to be in like the third or fourth, fifth round of startup drafts, I mean, pound that table, especially if it's Taysom Hill at quarterback, pound that table. All right, last one I took a big loss on was, not per se a loss, but absolutely whiffed on this one. I thought slow starts to rookie careers. Well, Justin Jefferson, wide receiver 8. CeeDee Lamb, wide receiver 22. T. Higgins, wide receiver 23. Chase Claypool, wide receiver 25. And Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver 31. So I thought the time, the integration time was going to be worse. I thought it was going to be much slower. And I was absolutely wrong on that. Now, is this the situation of a really good class and guys standing out? Sure. I think that's probably some of it. And maybe it's just that talent and this NFL, some of the more player-friendly schemes and that sort of stuff, it can just really elevate. Maybe that's some of it. And maybe these guys are just transcendent. I don't know. We'll have to see. But I would say, like, it's not necessarily the guys that we would have thought, right? Like, Brandon Ayuk was kind of dumped on for being a first round guy. He was the cheapest out of, what, six or seven of them that went. You know, Chase Claypool wasn't really a huge breakout guy that anyone was predicting. It was T. Higgins. It was, you know, he was later. You know, T. Higgins was in a group there with some other guys as well, like Denzel Mims was in that group, for example. You know, C. D. Lamb was up there as being one or two, and Justin Jefferson was four. So I would just say, like, even if you were to go in saying, hey, there's going to be, you know, four or five guys that are going to be top 36 guys, I'm not sure we would have projected these ones. So that would just be the thought again, making big calls. Absolutely took a whiff on this one, and didn't see this coming. But sort of transitioning forward, are we going to vault people up? And if we're going to do that, I have concerns about the predictability of doing that, right? No Judy this year, no Rager, right? I think Rager from day one, I thought looked like the best bet to be the target guy there. You know, Brandon Ayuk came in looking hurt, like it almost looked like a lost year. I mean, Chase Claypool was wide receiver three. T. Higgins was buried behind a bunch of guys, right? It really looked like a 2021 thing where he was going to play behind A.J. Green, right? All those things. You know, people projected C.D. Lamb to be the wide receiver one. He's wide receiver three. So this wide receiver 22 finish contradicts somewhat of what was actually happening in terms of snap shares. So that would be one that I would be a little bit concerned about, honestly, especially if Gallup's back, and maybe Gallup's a trade candidate or something like that. But that would be something I would just have a little bit of pause on. So it's a big story. Again, going forward, I'm not sure how we do it. Maybe we just trust talent. Maybe that's what the answer is. But I'm not sure. What I would say is I think the market maybe overreacts to this, and I have some stuff for base rates of start career starts in AOD 2021 that I think will guide this somewhat. This is over expectation would be what I would say. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for this episode. I hope you had a good, happy new year, and until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.